Jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu is no joke. It takes years to master.
Martial arts are a vehicle for developing your human potential. And nothing in my life has ever put me in face with reality better than jiu-jitsu.
Training in BJJ offers a powerful lens through which to examine some primary human concerns: truth versus delusion, self-knowledge, ethics, and overcoming fear.
There's more philosophy in our mats than actually philosophy in any Ivy League school.
Welcome to Philosophy.
What up, everybody?
And welcome to another episode of
Philosophy.
How's it going, my bro?
I am great. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you, man. I'm good. Why so good?
You know, a little sunny. Always in a good company here with Ali, and yeah, actually a bit awkward because I'm not leaving anymore. I'm not leaving London anytime soon.
What?
Yeah,
that's a big decision.
Awkward. I feel like it's awkward because I said goodbye to everyone. This is like more than once.
So the plan was you were going to go to Zambia.
Yeah.
You were going to be a film lecturer.
Yeah.
In Lusaka.
Yeah.
And now it's no more.
Yeah. Now I'm unemployed and without an idea of what's next.
Scarier places to be, I guess.
Not really. Scary, right? Like, that's the scary part. So what happened was I'm finishing up sending all the documents that are needed for me to get my working visa in Zambia.
Yep.
And I'm buying my ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And for a few weeks now, I've been feeling like something in my gut where it's like, I'm sure in my head about how good this job is and how great the project is. I really love the people that are involved, and like, they're very good. And the vision of the project is amazing. And then the second part was my heart. Like, I wasn't feeling like, I was telling you the other day that my definition of success, it's two things. First, when I get out of bed and having that fire in my belly and that thing in your heart that says go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I go to bed and it's just me and my pillow and I can sleep in peace. No, like, you know, like, just that voice, like whatever is telling you before you fall asleep, if knowing by myself that I'm at peace. So I kind of felt like, oh shit. I feel like this huge sensation in my belly about like, this isn't, don't do it. But I couldn't explain it to myself. So I remember I watched this video a long time ago, and then I went back to it about when to listen to your intuition. So of course I went to YouTube and I watched it again, and it was everything I didn't want to hear at the time, which was, think of it in three ways. What does it make sense to you logically? Does it make sense for you emotionally, like in your heart? And does it make sense to you in your gut? Like whatever you feel in those places. And if it says no in any of them, just don't do it.
Okay, so logically,
it made sense.
Yeah.
In my gut, it didn't.
Emotionally?
A bit question mark, like I wasn't sure. And I was like, I can't do it. So now, like, I'm pacing around thinking, oh shit, I gotta call them. Man, in the morning, they already sent me like my email with my name on it and everything.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I gotta call them. So I called Pluto, who's gonna be my future boss. And I told him exactly the truth. I told him this. I told him, yeah, like, I really like the project, but yeah, in my gut, I don't feel like I should do this. And I have experienced the repercussions many times in my life of suppressing my feelings and my emotions to do what made sense, regardless of how I felt. And then it always came back to bite me, whether through feeling depressed or through feeling angry or something like that. Emotions is coming in the weirdest ways. And I don't want to feel that. And I don't know what I'm going to do next. And I don't even think the decision I'm making makes sense, but I know it's right. and
he was pissed.
I was expecting, I don't know, he said, don't worry.
Nice.
You did not disappoint me.
Wow.
And I wanted you to know that I want to be the last person that is in between you and that gut feeling.
Wow, how amazing.
You have to always protect that above anything else, above what's right, above what's... And then he just started telling me stories about in his previous job, which was also like a very high position. One day he felt the same thing. Yeah. So he had to walk away from it and he didn't know how to explain.
Wow.
And he's telling me like, yeah, man, many times in my own career, I had great opportunities that I walked away from and they looked bad for my curriculum, but they made me a better human being.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ollie, I am a better human being. I'm kidding.
Because Pluto said so.
Yeah, kidding. But it's like, man, it's just like the relief from that was great. And I didn't even know I was stressed. Mm-hmm. But like afterwards, it just felt like, I took this huge gorilla off of my back.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like, I'm trying not to think too much about it. Like, I'm just thinking about what's the next step. And also trying to, like, listen to the gut, I guess. You know, it's like going for, like, whatever. I feel like, yeah, this is right. So that, yeah, I don't know. Like, I really struggle with doing things half-hearted.
Mm.
And I find that when I'm really into it, like, I go all the way. But that's a...
It was a huge decision.
Yeah, bro.
And a brave decision as well.
Oh, stop it.
It will always be one of your like milestone life decisions that you made, right?
That's true.
You turned down going to Zambia. That will always be the one. But who knows what's written, right? Like, you don't know it was gonna be bad, you don't know it was gonna be good. You don't know what's gonna happen now, if it's gonna be good or bad. So don't live in the fear of the future.
The crazy thing is I'm not scared. Amazing. At all. Like I feel like really at peace with the decision that mm-hmm. I made. And I think that's, I don't even think about it. It's like, it just feels right.
Mm-hmm.
I have a few ideas of what to do. But one thing that I learned recently, and I learned from jiu-jitsu and from this podcast, certain plans you shouldn't be talking about, you should do them and see how it goes.
Hmm.
Because when you go into a fight thinking, I'm going to do X, I'm going to do Z, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
The most important thing, it's not necessarily you managing to do them, but it's solving the problems when it does not work, whatever you had in mind.
Mm.
You know, did you watch the fight between Kamaru Usman and...
Yes, sir.
That first round when Kamaru got rocked.
Yeah, nearly went down. Really early on as well, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I think like what made him win the fight was composing himself.
Sticking behind that jab.
Yeah, sticking behind that jab and making sure that I am not gonna, like my major problem here is trying to wrestle with this animal.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to do that. So, yeah, it's like a...
Funny story about the Gilbert Burns Usman fight. So obviously he trains with Wagner Rocha. He trains at Fight Sports Miami, and we keep an eye on him. And he also chats to our coach. And we were looking at like we were watching his build up, looking who's been training with, and a couple of people that like knew them, knew Usman and Burns was like, yeah, when they used to train together, like Gilbert was all over him, like just like easy money. This thing's worth a punt. So I was like, all right, I'm going to put a bit of money on it. So I stuck, I think, £20. I had £10 for Gilbert Burns to win, and I had £10 by submission as well. So basically, like, if he won, the bet covered my money. If he won by submission, then, like, I got paid. Anyway, the night goes on. I have a few drinks. I'm starting to chat to my boys about it. My boy's like, you fancy Burns, do you? Yeah, I'm like, yeah, I fancy Burns. Like, you know, I know a few people. They talk to his boys, you know. They've got a good feeling about this. And they're like, oh, you know, Ollie, he never bets. Like, all right, like, let's put some money on. Anyway, I keep having a few more drinks. I start feeling myself. And I'm thinking, boys, you want a surefire win? You want to print money? Rodolfo Vieira. He will make you coin. So they start looking, and they're looking at the odds, and they're like, yeah, this thing looks like a surefire winner. They're like, boys, if I had the money, I'd put it all on him, but I just don't have enough to make it worth my while. And they're like, okay, we're going to lump on. So they stick all the money on. Anyway, I go to bed. I wake up, I check my phone, and my name is absolute trash. Adolfo Riera gasses out, gets subbed, loses. Burns as well. Now, Burns, like, I can live with. Like, I'm gutted. I really wanted him to win. I really wanted. And I thought he could do it as well. But, like, Usman's an amazing fighter, whatever. Adolfo was like, it cut me to my core. Like, you and I have watched so many of his videos, like, talked about his whole style, his game, like, his pressure passing, like, how good he is. Like, just the epitome of jiu-jitsu. And, man, like, to his own admission, he doesn't know what happened. He just, end of round one, completely lost it. And then got tapped out. I mean, all credit to the guy. But it was a dark and lonely place for me in that WhatsApp group.
Yeah, that actually hurt. I mean, I didn't make like a bunch of people bet on it, but
well, I want to be clear. I made no one bet on it. You should all gamble responsibly. It's your own money, and you're at risk if you don't. But yeah, I mean,
it felt unbelievable, man, watching. It was really sad, especially because yeah. It is someone that we really look up to.
One of the biggest upsets in UFC history. It's got to be. Like, yeah. It's got to be. But, yeah.
It is what it is, man.
It is what it is.
Actually, I think the thing that I feel, at least for Rodolfo, is the loss does not do justice to, like, his incredible career so far.
No. One loss doesn't like, yeah, define you.
Yeah.
What I don't like about it, I guess, is that there will be a lot of people that only know him for UFC, and they'll remember him for that, which, like, for us is just so unfair to the unbelievable achievements he's done. He's 31 years old, so he's the same age as us, and if you look at his jiu-jitsu career, it's just incredible. Unbelievable.
Yeah, incredible.
Utterly amazing.
But it's tough, man. It's tough. Like, I think it is also like a learning in his career as a martial artist.
Yeah.
Like, we were talking about this, about, like, sometimes you can get so... It's like, because, I don't know, like... It's like we are also biased, right? Because we know jiu-jitsu .
And I guess, yeah, that does define a bias. I usually rank jiu-jitsu and UFC higher than the other ones, though. Like, if you have a great takedown game in jiu-jitsu, then I would rank that higher than, like, a striking game, just in terms of odds, right? Like, if you can get them to the floor and you're better, then you just have a better chance of that initial attack.
One thing that it made me think about as well is, like, how good is Khabib? Because his game is very similar to Rodolfo's, right? Like, where it's like...
Maul them and just tie them up and smush them.
And he's running after you the whole fight. I remember him saying that American wrestling is very different than Dagestani wrestling.
Yeah.
Because I think he was giving the example with DC.
Yeah.
Where DC would fight, would wrestle a little bit. He'll lose the position, then go back to boxing and not go back to wrestling like until the next round.
Yeah.
And he was like, nah, man, we keep going in Russia.
Yeah, we don't stop.
Yeah, we don't stop.
The problem was Adolfo fought Kainan Duarte, I think, at Fight to Win, and he lost by a rear naked choke. And obviously we all spoke about that, and we were like, well, like, he's just been out of the game for a little while. Like, the no-gi game has advanced, like, quite a lot. Like, he's still getting his head around. In some of, like, the flow grappling interviews, he was talking about, like, how it's definitely a different sport than when he was, like, at his prime. So you kind of think that, and you think, like, Kainan Duarte, like, I think he is ranked, like, top competitor. So if he beats him, you're kind of like, yeah, okay, like, he just got beaten at a sport that he's yet to, like, catch up with. But then, like, to see him gas like that and then get caught in you know, just a...
That was tough,
horrible,
man.
Horrible
situation. Yeah, because in reality, like, it's not like he lost because his jiu-jitsu was not... It was just because he gassed out.
Yeah. And in, like, we were chatting before this, in his post, he doesn't really know why.
It can be so many things. Like, even the Gilbert Burns fight, it might not seem like a lot, but Usman has been in more championship fights.
Yeah, he's got more ring experience.
And I think like that moment, like emotionally, it might change your perspective in situations when you have an advantage and you're like, oh my God, gold is there. So
it's a tough one, man. I still think he can be champion though. I still think he can do it. I really do. But for sure, if I ever put any more money on, I'm not telling anyone.
It's tough. Also, like, I think after that fight, I gave even way more credit to Usman. Like, way more respect. I think after the Masvidal fight, I saw him as a boring fighter and so on, kind of thing. I was buying in a little bit into, maybe not fully, but that noise got to me. But man, he beat up the entire top five.
Yeah, he did.
He beat up Leon Edwards, Masvidal, Covington, Gilbert Burns, and the fifth one I'm forgetting.
So who's he going to fight next is the big question.
But even if he does, it's like he doesn't even have to.
That's true.
Doesn't even have to. On another note, Ali, last week we had a really interesting interview.
We had an amazing interview with Sam Crook from the Francis Ngannou Foundation out in Cameroon, doing some incredible work with the Battier Death Squad. Inspiring stuff. And I really want to go there now. I've been watching their YouTube videos, seeing these kids roll. They're savages. I just want to get out there. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. Yeah, all respect to him. I think the biggest takeaway for me was that he's sacrificed his own jiu-jitsu in place of bettering the lives of others through jiu-jitsu. Like, if he's not getting those regular roles in those regular sparring sessions and those training sessions and drilling, and he's putting it all into teaching, he'll be progressing, but in a very different way. He'll be getting very good at teaching jiu-jitsu, and his own jiu-jitsu will naturally suffer. But in the pursuit of, like, the amazing smile on these kids' faces when they start to, you know, catch that jiu-jitsu bug and see the benefits it has, and I just wish him all the success. I want it to grow and be as big as it can possibly be, and get them over to some of those competitions. Like, man, seeing one of those kids win, man, I'd probably cheer more than if I was watching my own fight. Genuinely. It's just beautiful stuff, really.
That's so true. We were actually watching the videos a few minutes ago of, like, the kids rolling.
Yeah.
And there was, like, a little boy, and he was, like, just wrestling with kids. Were like
tiny.
Yeah, like, almost, like, twice his size. Yeah.
And he's shooting double legs.
He had so much heart.
You love to see it.
And that brings a question to me, right? Like, what do you think are the qualities that jiu-jitsu has taught you the most?
Be comfortable in an uncomfortable position, like reversing a situation as well, like taking a step back and looking at a negative and thinking how you can, like, either work through the problem methodically or switch it into a positive. And like patience as well, like a deeper understanding and just a calmness. Those are probably the main things that come to mind.
But like, I mean, it does look a little bit general, like, specifically about you, like something that,
for me,
about you that you didn't know about yourself. You're like, oh,
I didn't know about myself.
Yeah,
that's a very good question. It's helped me to deal with like aggression a lot, like channel aggression and be mindful of aggression a lot. It's helped me to like just have a deeper understanding about like my work ethic and what I put into things and like evaluate what I want to do. But yeah, mostly just like the inner dialogue I have with myself is a lot more peaceful and a lot more objective, and like being presented with problems and situations where you could panic or get stressful, like recognizing that you can only really affect like the 6 meters around you kind of philosophy, like having the ability to stop and think, like, what can I affect here? And if I can't affect it, what can I do? Like, is there anything I can do to give myself all the pieces of the puzzle? Or if I have to wait, and if I have to, like, suffer a period of time where I'm waiting for something to find out, then be comfortable in that position and be mindful of it. And just generally, like, a lot more calm and considered, I think. A lot more open to other people and who they are. Like, jiu-jitsu, as I've always said, is a great leveler. It kind of unites us all and like one leveling playing field, which is cool. Yeah, I think those for the most part. You?
It's interesting. Hey, man, let me soak in just what you're saying, man. You're dropping so much wisdom.
Well, I don't know about wisdom, man. One of the things I love that we do here is we just speak very honestly about like our jiu-jitsu experience and the journey we're on. So I think those for me are the big ones, definitely.
I don't know, man. I think a general one for me, I was actually thinking about this today, about this idea that jiu-jitsu is the only martial art that you can fight off your back on the floor.
It doesn't necessarily mean you should.
But you can.
But you can.
Meaning, worst comes to worst.
Yeah.
You can still attack from the worst position you can be in.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're still dangerous. Like, things are not looking good, but you are still dangerous. You're still a threat.
A very good friend of ours, Mr. Luis Ribeiro,
yeah,
said that his opinion on the Vieira fight was he should have just grabbed hold of him on his back, closed guard, held him, bread and butter, foundation stuff. Just hold on to him, breathe, recover, and then jiu-jitsu.
You know, there was a moment, I was actually watching a breakdown, I think it's from BJJ Scout, about how Damian Maia manages his energy. When he shoots, if he can't get the takedown, he goes for half guard.
Nice.
So in that half guard position, he manages to rest and also can still switch for a sweep. So it's like a nice link that gives him enough time.
You like the sound of that, I imagine, don't you? You like the sound of a takedown into a half guard position.
Amazing. It's so good. It's so good. I think it's like, especially because it's like, takedowns are so draining.
Yeah.
But it's like in 5 minutes, if you're doing that, you go for a takedown, you can't get a takedown, you link to a half guard, and then you link to a sweep. It's like even if the guy escapes and gets up, you're resting a little bit in the half guard. So it's like not like takedown, 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 and then...
I mean, he had a blueprint, right? He had like a fight style that was quite well
documented. But to be fair, it was working until it didn't.
It was Burns that beat him, wasn't it?
No, you're talking about Damien. Sorry, I was talking about Rodolfo now. Because I'm thinking about the first minute of that fight. He took Hernandez down. He mounted him.
Mate, first round, I thought he looked good.
Yeah, until like it started gassing out.
Yeah.
But yeah, what did I learn, Ollie? So like that has been big. Like the idea that... Because I think sometimes... In jiu-jitsu, like, let's say if we are both fighting for a takedown, the worst thing is actually hesitating.
Yeah.
In the fear that you're going to end up in a worse position.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But having that confidence that I'll just shoot. If anything goes bad, I'll go to guard and I'll attack him from my back.
Yeah.
That is, like, a huge advantage. And I think when I look at my life, it's like I've embraced the part of me that it's more... of a risk taker, and it's like if anything goes bad, I just gotta find out how do I attack from the back. Like, it's like things are bad, I shouldn't let the situation pass my guard.
Yeah,
but I am still dangerous. It doesn't look like it, but I am still dangerous. That's like one general thing.
If you're gonna go,
yeah,
you gotta be sharp.
Yeah, like when it's time to go, and if things go wrong there, find a solution. It's like you're still dangerous. But then something very specific to me, I think it's I've become more considerate of other people, especially like when I tend to be like super passionate. Like, I think in a sense of sometimes I think I let my emotions get the best of me, get overexcited.
Yeah.
You know,
jump from mount when there's no need.
Yeah, I get overexcited. Sometimes I end up hurting people because of that when I'm rolling.
Yeah.
Or I tend to get a good position and rather than just waiting there, I try to go over to the next step. And I see those same things in my life as well.
Yeah.
Like, I tend to get overexcited.
I always think what coach says, like, you have to know what you're doing. And I think as soon as you know what you're doing, you become confident in that. Like, if you have a position, if you're not confident, then you almost, like, move out of the position. Whereas, like, a high-level guy will just hold that position. And he knows, like, exactly what's coming.
But it's also a little bit of sometimes I can even see this. It's like, sometimes I know what I'm doing, but I hear this voice almost being like, have you seen that meme where like it's like an angel standing and then like a devil behind him, like,
go for the submission.
Yeah, go for the submission. Exactly.
Take Mount. You know you want Mount.
But it's like, rather they be like, sit here. You're like, yeah, no, exactly that voice. Like, just go, just go.
You can do it. You are the baddest man in the planet.
And next thing I know, it's like right after I do it, I was like, I knew I shouldn't do that.
There's no worse feeling in jiu-jitsu than making a mistake and knowing you've made a mistake.
And yeah, man. So, but I have a question for you, which is quite interesting, because we were talking about this on the previous podcast with John Jitsu, where you mentioned that a big decision you made in your life was not going to moving schools and going to study film.
Oh, yeah, dropping out of university.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, like, that makes me wonder, how do you think about stuff like that? Like, when to listen to your gut and when to do the thing that makes sense on paper? Because I remember reading this book. It's like a novel, The Count of Monte Cristo.
Any good?
Amazing.
It's a classic, right?
Yeah, it's a classic. It's about this guy that is looking for vengeance. Like, someone just wanted his wife, so... Yeah, his lover kind of thing. And it was his best friend. And he took everything from him and got him to, like, go into a jail somewhere in the mountains, really far away from everything. I'm butchering this. But, yeah. And the thing is... The thing is, once he's in the jail, he meets this wise man who teaches him much about how to be, like, an aristocrat.
Uh-huh.
It teaches him about etiquette. It teaches him how... It's almost like the journey of someone becoming a man. Okay. Right? Like, of becoming an adult, going from, like, a naive man to, like, you know, growing up kind of thing. And then there is one time where this man gives him a map. Like, he finds a map of, like, this treasure.
Mm-hmm.
And then he runs away from the jail. But he runs up to a cliff. And the only way out of escaping from the guards is to jump through that cliff. Sometimes I find that a lot of the decisions in life that are the most important are like that.
Mm.
When you have to jump through that cliff, you don't really have any help or anyone to turn to. It's just you and yourself, and only you know whether you're going to jump or not, kind of thing.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I said it last time. I've always had this belief that everything in life comes down to, like, one question. So, like, for you, is, am I going to go to Zambia or am I not? And, like, you can take that and apply it to anything. And it's what coach says, like, yes or no. Are you going or are you not going? Yes or no. And then, like, you can list off all, like, the good points and all the bad points. And you can, like, explain all, like, the intricate, like, pros and cons and why this would be good and why that wouldn't be so great and how it would, like, you can go on and on and on, but it will always just come down to, like, yes or no. Like, are you going to go or are you not going to go? I think for me it was, like, am I going to stay or am I not going to stay? And I just knew it wasn't right, but it was a gut feeling, but it, with me, it was also mixed into, like, I weighed up my options.
Hmm.
Like, I really did. And I kind of knew that, like, I could reapply. Like, if I really wanted to go to university, which I believed I did, I had good enough grades that I could drop out and reapply. So then what was stopping me from dropping out, which was really nothing, it was unplanned. I had to, like, figure out what I was going to do for a year and ended up working the most boring, mind-numbing temporary job in a for a bank and doing mortgage applications, like phoning 140-odd people every single day. It literally soul destroying, which wasn't great, but it wasn't, I didn't want to stay at, like, the sake of my own, like, future, my own happiness and my own, like, education and my own career, and because I felt I should stay. If I didn't want to stay, like, I was just going to come out. And I think one of the factors for me was, if I'm going to get into debt, I may as well get into debt doing something I love, not for anyone else or anything. So That was mine, I think. Do you think that was a deciding factor for you?
I think to be honest, like I know my other options.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, but also I think a deciding factor is just like I think experience, like of many times of feeling like something is right and feeling like but at the same time thinking, oh no, this is the right thing to do, and rather than listening to that same gut feeling afterwards, just regretting like, oh, I messed up, like I knew it, I shouldn't have.
It's weird because you listen to anyone who gives advice and they say, yeah, like listen to your gut. However, it kind of feels a bit reckless to say to someone, listen to your gut.
It is true. Like, I think, how can I say it? It's like, because it's not, I think there is a sense of what is the worst that can happen. I think that really counts. Like, and I ask myself that question, like, what is really the worst that can happen?
Yeah.
And if it's not like as bad as I'm fearing,
probably all good then.
Yeah, probably all good though. It's like things will go best. But one thing I believe also, it's I believe that I shouldn't lie. I shouldn't lie to myself.
No. Yeah,
and
yeah.
That was the point. Like, I mean, before deciding or anything, it's like, yeah, I listened to my gut and everything, but I also was very honest with myself. Like, it's like, I know that as much as I'm listening to my gut, I also don't feel 100% aligned with this choice. And when I told, I think after having the conversation, I think I felt like a more like I'm acting with integrity.
Yeah.
Because I think like one of the things that I thought about it is like, man, if I'm going to work with someone for someone, I wouldn't like to go kind of hiding this huge secret about I'm not so sure about.
It's not,
you
fair
know what
to
mean?
Them as well, is it?
Exactly.
Like, it's not fair to you first and foremost, but it's also not fair to them. They want an engaged employee who's as passionate as they are, and if you're holding something back, then you're never going to give your
exactly
amount. And that's not fair because someone else could fill that role and be 100% passionate about it.
And sometimes I think that's a huge deal, like sort of honest communication, the amount of engagement, it's more important than the amount of skill, because I think something that I've noticed is like sometimes you meet someone that you're working on a project or anything like that, and the person sometimes that has the most skill might not be as engaged. And someone that doesn't have any skill, they'll be ready to do anything for it, you know, sort of. That makes a huge difference.
It's hard with any team, right? Like, how do you unite one team under a unified goal? Everyone's coming at something, especially in work, right? Like, so much, I think, of the whole way that, like, companies are set up, they employ you with your skill, but not necessarily your passion. Like, some people are coming there to further their career. Some people are, like, gaining the skills. Some people love what they do. Some people are just doing it because they have to feed
their family.
So how do you engage an unengaged team, and how do you pull them all under one mission and goal? Well, I was going to say, when you first told me about going to Zambia, you were super excited. I remember, like, really excited, and we were all excited for you, and everyone was like, man, is this what you want? And you're like, yeah, this is what I want. The point I was going to make is that it's a very, very difficult decision to then turn around to those people and say, yeah, I'm actually not sure
I think it's not, I think the difficult part is not that I just turned around. It's like I knew that if I don't turn around, I didn't have a choice of waiting a little bit. No, listen, waiting a little bit more or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did have a choice. But I think, like, in a sense of, I was getting to the point where if I let it linger for longer, it's going to be...
You'd removed your choice.
Not remove my choice, because I had a choice to do it at any point. You're right, but I think it's like, is this just gonna be worse? Because it's like now it's like, oh, we can't find a replacement for you, you know, or something like that. But you have a good point.
My point is, my dad always said to me, "You always have a choice."
Yeah,
you
love that.
Always have a choice, which I've always 100% believed in. You can remove choices from yourself, but then if you want to get pedantic, that was a choice.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's like I didn't want to say I don't want a choice, but I think there is a point where you can burn bridges.
You go past the point of no return, right?
Yeah, you can get to the point of like where now you've hurt someone.
Yeah.
And
including yourself. If you hadn't been true to yourself, if you hadn't said I don't want to do this, and then you'd gone to Zambia, and then however many weeks in, you're sitting there thinking like, I knew this was wrong.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure you've been through this. Like, it doesn't even need to be something that big, but sometimes you felt like I don't feel right about this, and you're like, you do it. You're like, ah.
Do you know one of the best lessons I ever learned? When I was starting out in my first ever job, I set myself a salary goal, and I was like, I'm going to hit this by the time I'm 30. Like, that's my goal. And I had this isn't me bragging. I had zero concept of how salaries worked. And then I hit that, and I was like, oh, okay, that's actually not that impressive. Like, that's actually normal, like, mm-hmm. achievement. So then I was like, well, I really want to stay motivated, so I'm just going to double that. And that's actually like quite a good goal for me, at least in my industry, in my profession, to have hit by the time I'm 30. That was like my goal. Anyway, I moved down to London, lost my job, went through a series of like really, really horrible places to work with some just... I'm not going to go into it too much. Just
not
like,
the best situation.
Just really bad job experiences, and came into this job I currently have with just like a real jaded view of the world. And I remember not too long after I started this job that I'm in now, another company approached me and they were like, we're going to offer you just a bit more than this salary goal that I'd hit. And I was like, oh, okay, let's hear you out. And they said... they said a series of things that were perfectly describing all the bad experiences I'd had in my last couple of roles. Without going into too much detail, I'd have to go into the specifics of my job. But basically, they said a few things which set off some red flags to me of like, this is going to be exactly the experience you've just gone through. And I let go of my goal and I was like, nah, I'm not interested, sorry. Like, give it to someone else. And I always remember wondering, like, if I'd made the right decision. And then 6 months, a different recruiter rang me and offered me the same role. And I just was like, yeah, I've actually already turned this job down, but can I ask, like, why it's not getting filled? And they're like, oh, we've actually filled 2 people in that time, but they've all left. And I was like, well, that tells me everything I need to know about this. Wow. Then she was trying to play it off as like, you know, these weren't like a cultural fit. Like, it didn't like quite have the right like skill experience and stuff. And I was like, maybe that's the case. Or like, maybe they figured out what I was lucky enough to know before I went in. I don't even know the point I was trying to make there. It's just a funny story that's gone on.
But I think it's a bit of like a gut feeling with also experience, right?
Yeah,
but it wasn't much of a gut feeling. It's like, if it smells like a duck, walks like a duck.
probably
is a duck.
Yeah, and it was kind of just letting go to that, like that I have to achieve this kind of thing. And
I think it's a bit deceiving, man. Like, one of the things that I noticed with written on paper, things that are written on paper, it's like the blue belts that maybe it's like our coach. Right, the way he got his blue belt,
it's crazy, right?
It's crazy, right? Like, he had to do this difficult trip, and he was unsure of it, and he called his coach, and
he had to come back from Sweden. Yeah, Sweden. I think he went out there to like live on the mats and like train at the gym, and then it was super, super cold, and he was like, nah.
Yeah.
But then getting back, it was like difficult because of his whole like
of his visa
and situation.
And he wasn't sure if he was going to come back, but he couldn't stay there. So he calls his friend who started teaching him jiu-jitsu. Yeah. And his friend is like, if you do that, man, you're the man. I'll give you a blue belt. And he went, right? And eventually he grew into his blue belt and so on. But it's like, I think there are many circumstances that life brings that maybe you have to grow into becoming the blue belt, right? Or you already deserve the blue belt.
Yeah, I asked coach that. I was like, when did you, because his purple belt, I think he got because like he terrorized another like team's bus or something.
Yeah,
like, so then they got his purple belt. And then there was a situation where I think someone basically said, like, nah, you need to go back to white belt and then I'll promote you up through the ranks. And I think he said, like, nah, I'm going to go it alone. So I asked him outright and said, like, when... Because at that point, you could feel like maybe you're not that belt. So I was like, when did you really... And by the way, he's the most legitimate black belt ever. You roll with that guy, like, you'll know. So I was like, when did you start feeling like, you know, you were that belt? Like, your knowledge, your skill level, like, everything. He said, brown belt. Like, I knew I was that level. I was confident in my ability.
But he also took responsibility to be like, if I'm wearing this belt, I'm going to be this belt, right?
Yeah.
But then here's the thing with all of that that I was saying. It's like, I look at, I think one of the things you're talking about, this thing about having this goal and going for it. I think it's really important. But at the same time, I think I've learned that life is about your experience of it.
Mm.
A lot of the things that we see on paper that people have achieved, they look good on paper.
Yeah, completely.
But it doesn't mean that when they look back at those experiences, they actually are like, ah, I'm actually happy about my life. I think about many things. I was doing my CV recently and I was thinking about many of the things that I did. And I was like, wow, most of the things that make me good at my job and most of the things that I am very proud of and that like make me be outstanding were on the category of like extras, not on like the things that I had certifications for and that made my CV look like really good. It was like on everything else that I did on my past time. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting.
But how do you prove merit? Like, how do you justify to someone that, like...
Believe me.
You have my word, good sir.
Believe, look in my eyes. I think...
This CV is such, like, a crude way of like, demonstrating who you are. And then it just becomes a game. Like, if you redo your CVs, like, you can just Google CV templates, buy one, input your stuff, and then it's like, oh, my God, your CV looks incredible. It's like, nah, come on. Like,
yeah, I think CV is a game. It's like there are people that are good at doing CVs. There are people that know how to get jobs. It's like they know how to pass job interviews.
Man, I heard the funniest story the other day, and no names will be mentioned. I know a girl who was going for a job interview, and she got set a task. And you know Fiverr? Mm-hmm. She paid someone to do the task for her.
Yes! She beat the game. Oh, my God.
And literally, I have no sympathy for the company. Like, just be better at recruiting. Don't slot into the like same old. Like, if you're gonna play the game and you got beat, like, shake hands, off you go.
But I mean, it's a little bit of. I think it's Jay-Z. He has like a rhyme about this, about like I became a millionaire, but maybe I've done things to even from going to like the past life I was living to this life. There was a moment that I had to do a few things that I'm not proud of until like I cleaned all my record, you know, but it's like, I think like for that girl, for example, she really needs the job. And she knows that if she tells the truth of like, believe me, I can do anything.
Yeah.
They're not going to hire her. Right? So it's like, it's kind of like it's a little bit messed up, but it is what it is.
Have you ever interviewed people?
No, I never have.
Yeah, I've done a few.
Yeah, I've only done for like casting actors, but yeah.
Ooh, casting couch, is it?
Wow. Wow, Ollie.
No, I'm really fair in when I interview someone. I really, really want to make sure that they feel comfortable. So like, I'm super friendly, super like, do you want a drink? Like, how are you? Like, if you need them, like, chill. Like, if they're nervous and stuff, I make a real effort to like ease them into it and make sure they're cool. Then what I do is I got this technique from a guy who used to be a company I work for. I'll start at the bottom of their CV and I'll go through it and I'll just check things with them. And I'm like, oh, okay, so you worked here from this date till this date. And I'll look at them. And there's two reactions. The first one will be like, yeah, like that sounds about right. And in that role, I did X, Y, Z. And then there are some people like, be like, well, what is it? Like, I've wrote it down. Is that right? Like, I'm not... And then they will just like... melt and implode. And I promise you, there are two reactions. The one that just can't handle it and thinks you're questioning them and like attacking them and like being like, is that right? Are you sure that's right? And then the other person that's there, like really assured, really self-confident and just like, yeah. And then uses it to like talk about it.
Who is lying, Ali?
Exactly.
Like, please don't tell me it's the person that knows that it's true.
Man, I promise you, one guy like pretty much started having an argument with me. Like, it got so confrontational and was like, I don't know why you're checking this. Like, why would I know that information? I can't remember every role I've done. Like, why would you like not have that? Did you not read it before? And I was like, I think maybe we're done here, aren't we?
Wow.
That is crazy. And anyone that recruits, try it out. Like, and the thing about it is, like, I'm not doing anything other than read back their information to them. But it's so interesting how they see that as like an affront, or like they start to guess, like, is it right? Like, have I got the right thing down? And like, you're checking and seeing. And yeah, it's just quite funny to see.
It is. It's like, it's almost like you are also playing a game.
Yeah, I am. I really am. Completely. I'm putting them in a position where, like, I'm putting them under a little bit of pressure. Like, not a lot. Like, it's not like I'm doing some of the interviews you hear where it's, like, insanely grilling them for, like, really intense roles. All I'm doing is reading back their information and just putting a little bit of stress on them. And I promise you, there are some that just, like, really take it in their stride. And then there are others that completely cannot handle it. And that's quite telling just of a person rather than if their skill level's there.
Yeah, I mean, even if the person's not lying and they lose their shit, it's like...
You don't want to work with that
person,
do you?
Yeah, I don't want to work with you, yeah. Like, yeah.
When we're busy and, like, I need loads of stuff from you and I come and I ask you, like, and I'm going to get all that, like, nah.
Yeah, thank you very much, sir. see you next week. Good luck. Man, it's... it's quite interesting, sort of... Actually, you know, I was listening to the podcast and I realized that I say it's... It's quite interesting. It's very interesting.
I go, man, that's incredible. I was listening to this, the Sam Crook one back, and I'm like, you know what, man, that's so incredible. That's incredible.
Yeah. You know, one thing that's incredible, it's how much listening, not listen, because I don't listen to the whole podcast. I listen when I'm making like the social media content and everything. But it brought another level of awareness to my speaking and to my listening that I was not
prepared for.
Yeah, I was not prepared for it. Like, even listening is so, it requires, it's a very active skill.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Especially a podcast when there's two people talking and like you're following a narrative. Yeah. Active listening is quite,
because if I drift away, I can be like, what were you saying? You know? But in conversation, I do a lot more of that, you know, like where someone is just speaking sometimes and you're tired and that person just becomes like background noise and you're like, oh, what were you saying? Mm. Yeah, I can't do that with you. I got to look you in the eyes, Wally. but on the note of intuition and so on, it's, I think it's two things, right? I don't know if there is such a thing as the right or the wrong decision. In many ways, you make the best of out of what you have. But there is telling the truth and lying.
Yeah.
And I also think that the truth is not permanent. The truth changes.
I agree with that.
And if you tell at least in my experience, if I tell the truth now and 10 minutes later, it's not the truth anymore. The hard part, it's not necessarily telling the truth. I guess the fear is, ooh, if I say exactly the truth as it is, what is going to be the reaction of everyone? You know, like, am I flaky now? And am I all these things? But it is what it is. And
yeah. You're the one that has to go to bed at night and put your head down on the pillow.
Yeah.
And live with it.
Yeah. And yeah, if you know you're lying, it's like now you're almost like split it, right?
And also, like, in a weird way, it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, you don't know what Zambia would have bought, so you can make it whatever scenario you want there. It can be a really good one, it can be a really bad one. You can feel like you missed out, or you can feel like you can dodge a bullet, but the truth of the matter is you actually will never know. All you can deal with is that immediate, do I want to do this?
You know, it's crazy. I actually received a message from someone that's working with me. And she was kind of proposing something to put on the syllabus and stuff. Very exciting still. But at the same time, it's like the thing about, I've made a decision. This is it. I got like, it's like, last time I didn't follow my gut, it came back to bite me. What comes next? I don't know. Yeah. Did I make the right choice? Did I didn't? I didn't. What can I learn from this? I can learn what happens once I follow my gut.
The thing is, man, like in 5-10 years, you may look back and have everything you wanted, and then it's like, oh, thank goodness I didn't go to Zambia. Things have a way of working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you ever watched Charlie Wilson's War? Have I spoken about this before? The Zen Master? I want to make sure I get this right. Charlie Wilson's War is a great film with Tom Hanks about a US senator called Charlie Wilson who basically won the war against the Soviets in Afghanistan, but then incidentally had armed the Afghanistans, and we all know how that one turned out. Basically, there's a guy in it who works for the CIA? FBI? CIA, I think. CIA. Played by Philip Seymour Hoffman. And he tells a story about a Zen master, and it's something along the lines of, like, there's a little boy and he gets a horse, and the whole village says, like, oh, that's amazing. And the Zen master says, we'll see. And then the little boy falls off his horse and he breaks his arm. And everyone says, oh, that's so sad. And the Zen master says, we'll see. And then a war breaks out and everyone goes off to fight except for the little boy because his arm's broken. And everyone says, like, oh, that's so great. And the Zen master says,
we'll see.
Yeah. We'll see.
That's true. On that note, guys, thank you so much for listening.
It's been real, man.
No. Yeah, it has been real.
We'll see how it works out, I guess.
Cool, man. Stay safe in the streets, people.
And, look after yourselves.
Of course.